So I'm Sean Kneipp, and I'm from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm here to talk to you today about the CDC-funded study that we're doing that is looking at the effects, trying to discern what the effects are of the chronic disease self-management program. And we're doing that looking at employment outcomes for lower wage workers. We've coined it the Smart Life Study. So I have no relationships to disclose. I want to acknowledge all of the centers and institutes at UNC that have helped in making this study possible. We have a lot of employment and work-related centers there that have really helped guide the development of the study. And this is our study team. Lots of folks working with us. We have a couple of CDC scientific collaborators in the chronic disease department who have helped guide the study as well. And we have tons and tons of students. This is a pretty large trial. It's going to be a 3 to 4 year randomized controlled trial with 400 people enrolled, so we need all hands on deck to help with this. So let me tell you a little bit about chronic disease burden. People read about this all of the time. We know that it's a burden for all, and particularly the people who suffer from chronic disease. But we spend $1.3 trillion in the U.S. per year on chronic disease. The cost predominantly reflects really suboptimal management, and that includes things like symptom exacerbation and reduced functioning outcomes that happen because of that. There are health-related presenteeism and absenteeism costs to U.S. employers, and for those of you who aren't familiar with presenteeism, it's being at work and just not functioning fully, or just sort of being there in body, but not really doing what you could be doing. So per employee per year, about $1,600 is attributed to presenteeism and absenteeism due to health-related problems to employers, and about $225 billion annually. So one of the things that we do know is that socioeconomically disadvantaged populations or lower wage workers bear the brunt of the chronic disease burden, and they account for the greatest costs in all of those costs we reviewed. Average employed adults report 1.1 impaired work days, or a presenteeism type of a day, absent or lower productivity. Workers with chronic health conditions, though, report an average of 6.7 impaired work days per month. That's a pretty significant difference. Nationally, over 2.5 billion days of impaired work days per month occur for employees with chronic disease, and so you can see how those days missed can accumulate to the dollars that we talked about previously. 31% of adults between the ages of 45 and 64 have multiple chronic disease conditions. And one thing that I should point out now, we touch on this again a little bit later, but when I talk about chronic disease conditions and when other people talk about chronic disease conditions, we can be talking about somewhat different things. So I'm talking about the typical things, heart disease, diabetes, arthritis, some of those kinds of things. But there are a number of other conditions that are really quite disabling that often don't make the top 10 chronic disease list. Migraine headaches, low back pain, some of those kinds of things as well. So in this context for this study, when I'm talking about chronic disease, I'm talking about all of those things that can impair functioning. Lower wage workers have higher rates of conditions, and when they do have conditions, they have more significant functional impairment. Again, largely due to the suboptimal self-management of that, or management. So workplace health has become a big focus in terms of a way to insert health into the lives of people, because people are at work a whole lot of the time. I feel like I am, probably everybody in the room does. It's gained momentum over the past decade. There are health promotion programs, healthy lifestyle, and disease screening kinds of programs that have really been integrated into workplaces. And although there's I think some ambivalence about the effectiveness of all of those in whole, there are some very good programs that are out there, generally that show positive gains. However, when you look at what's offered, those things are typically less available to lower wage workers and who tend to be the more transient or temporary kind of workforce. And many of those programs, although great, a walking program is wonderful at work, most of the programs are not at all designed to address the optimal management of existing conditions and existing symptoms. And that happens to be where lower wage workers live, probably in terms of what their needs are in addition to walking trails and some of those other things, walking groups that they have at work. So the CDSMP is an evidence-based program. It's a self-management program developed by Lorig et al. At Stanford University. It's a 6-week group course. How many people know about the CDSMP? So about half. It's been tested a lot. The study's findings fairly consistently show improved chronic disease management, that it reduces social and role limitations, and it prevents functional decline. So it's a highly effective program. It's currently being disseminated I think it's well over 100,000 participants now in 26 states. But one of the things about it is that it's largely been tested in and marketed to older adult populations who are about 65 years of age or older. And as a result of the initial testing of this program, it's administered and funded through agencies of community living, which are essentially local areas on aging or agencies on aging. So it's when you think about lower wage workers reaching these programs or the program reaching the lower wage workers, it's their ships crossing in the night, sort of. The program itself has a lot of potential for reducing disparities, though. There are social and behavioral principles that underlie the CDSMP. And so theoretically, when you look at what's packaged in that program, the things should be transferable to slightly younger populations. The functional improvements should also transfer into employment productivity and work performance. And the group that's most likely to benefit are those with a higher burden, which is really the lower SES or lower wage working group. So we have some preliminary findings just in a very quick pass through some of the national CDSMP data that shows a few in that group, in the population we're interested in, have been exposed to the program, and there are some existing data about their findings, but it hasn't been widespread. There hasn't been widespread delivery to that group. In the few that have received it, they're more likely to complete the CDSMP 6-week course and have better health outcomes. So if you can reach this group, and if you can do it in a way that the program is accessible to them, we should be able to see important health gains. So the study aims, we have several aims, but the first one is really to test the effect of the CDSMP on employment and health outcomes and look at that over the course of a year. We're focused, again, on presenteeism and absenteeism as one of the employment outcomes, but we have a whole host of other health-related indicators that we're keeping as well. We're also going to conduct an economic evaluation of the CDSMP that calculates the return on investment for the healthcare system and state governments as well, trying to imagine some of the possibilities for funding partnerships and different models for delivering this in communities, and assess what features of the social marketing materials designed for the target population are associated with study enrollment. That was another thing we didn't really know very much about going into this study, and I'll show you a little bit about that. that I think we talked about. This is the one of the flyers for recruitment for the program. We spent a really long time working with our community advisory group members to develop this. The CDC had template formats that they had given us to start as sort of a basis to work from. And we worked with the group and our target population to say, what's going to catch your eye? What do you care about? What's going on in your life right now that's going to matter, that's going to draw your attention to something to help you get more engaged in self-management? So these are some of the things that they came up with. As I said, it's a randomized clinical trial. We have 400 folks that we're aiming to enroll. We have an attenuated attention control condition, which is a financial planning seminar for people who aren't in, randomized to the CDSMP, because that's of interest to this group as well. They're very interested in that. And we don't want to have a control group that feels like they're getting nothing. So. We also have a number of employment-oriented community partners. So one of our primary challenges in the study, frankly, has been getting into employment settings in order to just push the email send button to get the flyer to your employees. That's really all we're asking. We're not asking to deliver this during work time at your work site or spend any of your resources. We just want you to push the send button. And it's been really tough. Employers are less and less and less likely to want to partner and or have anything to do with health programs. So that has been the challenge of the century for us, and we keep plugging away. And we're going not just to employers, we have a number of other community partners where things have worked out well. So eligibility between 40 and 64 years of age, they have to be working full time or nearly full time. They have to have English as a be fluent in written and spoken English, have at least one chronic condition, and earn less than $60,000 a year. This is where we stand to date, but this is outdated, almost hourly. We did hit the jackpot one day when the study manager called and said, "Holy Batman," that's the quote unquote, "Holy Batman, we have a lot of people registered." So we were able to get the state health plan send out the information through their network of wellness leaders in employer groups and things like that, and that was great. I think we have now like 577 people who've registered. That doesn't mean they're enrolled. There's a lot of attrition that happens along the way, and we're working to up that enrollment number, but I think we are probably around 75, almost 100-ish. So you can take a look at the demographics of the folks who are making their way through the eligibility questions. Most have about 2.8 conditions. Most people have a PCP or a primary care provider, and that's not surprising given where we're getting the bulk, where we have had the yield from the state health plan sending that out. I think there are some roles for public health nurse scientists, for sure. We can, you know, we're able to look at populations at risk and think about promising strategies that are out there to reduce disparities. You don't have to design an entirely new intervention necessarily. We have to think of really creative and innovative ways to get some of what's out there that might work very well or that has decent preliminary evidence that says it will work very well to the populations at risk and test it. We understand the needs of disadvantaged populations and what their concerns are, and we're working around those in lots of ways I haven't even talked about in terms of getting them to the program and helping to facilitate some of that. We can also lead team science efforts to determine the efficacy or effectiveness of evidence-based programs to higher-risk groups, looking at strategic outcomes for eliciting program uptake and reach through employers, and disseminating findings to PHN practitioners. I mean, our hope is that if we have good outcomes in improving health and improving employment outcomes and reducing costs, that I can see a lot of public health nurses and communities everywhere trying to take programs that exist in their communities with a whole network of people, of interventionists already there, and just working to get it to a population that could probably, that if we find this, would benefit from it quite a bit. So that's my email, and I guess we'll take questions at the end. Thanks.